Your Business in Space is brought to you by the InterAstra Institute, the global public square for the business of space. Join us at interastra.space.
In a day and age when space can seem a little too normal for people, space exploration, it really helped make it very real for the people who might ask the question, why are we spending all this money to send to space when we have all these problems on Earth? Well, the truth is, everything that we're learning in space benefits life on Earth. Hi, I'm Lauren Worley, also known as Space Lauren, and you are listening to Your Business in Space. From 2011 to 2016, I was press secretary and senior advisor at NASA, supporting President Obama's vision for space exploration. In a nutshell, what that really means is taking the ideas and the policies passed by Congress, listening to stakeholders like NGOs and businesses in the space industry, and then making that come to fruition. And a big part of what we did was emphasize the important role that small businesses in America play in the space program. I'll give you a quick example. The ribbons that we use to make military medals also were the same ribbons that we used on the Mars Curiosity rover. There's countless examples of small businesses throughout the country that have taken NASA technology and implemented that in their own business to sharpen their processes or to create something new. That was a really big part of what we did. And in a day and age when space can seem a little too normal for people, space exploration, it really helped make it very real for the people who might ask the question, why are we spending all this money to send to space when we have all these problems on Earth? Well, the truth is, everything that we're learning in space benefits life on Earth. Well, when I was a kid growing up, I asked my parents to take me to Washington, D.C. for my 6th birthday. So my entire life, I knew that I wanted to be working, not just identifying problems, but actually doing something about them. I have a degree in journalism, but I knew really quickly that I didn't want to write about potholes. I wanted to work to fill the potholes. And so through that, I found my way into science communications. My first job, though, in high school, I actually did a radio show on Sundays from 5 a.m. to 1 p.m., and I introduced all the gospel programming. So I would say the next program is brought to you by George and Jean and the Gospel Melatones. And then I would play a cassette tape for 30 minutes and then do it again. But a cool part about it was I produced the noon news. So at 16, 17 years old, I was producing a newscast that went out in my very small community. I have a hometown of 1,700 people, but it really helped me make the connection between what was important to my neighbors and friends, but also talking about global issues. And I would have had no idea in the 90s that that was going to prepare me for a job in the 2010s working at our nation's space agency, but it was incredibly relevant. So I grew up in Ohio. The Wright family, important not just the Wright brothers, but the Wright's sister as well, who's an important part of aviation history. John Glenn, Neil Armstrong, Sonny Williams, you know, you could write a book about Ohio and aerospace. So I don't know if it's in the water or not, but in Ohio, we always say we're first in flight. In 2003, we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the Wright brothers' historic flight. And my dad worked with Dayton Television to do a downlink with the International Space Station with a school in Ohio and a school in North Carolina. He actually got a mission patch made for it and everything. That moment really captured for me how close I was to space and how I could actually be part of it. I didn't have to be an astronaut or a researcher or a doctor or a material scientist or anything like that. There's a role for people beyond what you might traditionally think of space industry. You need writers and poets and accountants and nutritionists and all the way up and down. You know, there's a famous story from John F. Kennedy's time as president where he's going through the, you know, Kennedy Space Center and he sees someone sweeping the floor and he asks the janitor, "What do you do here?" And he said, "Sir, I'm getting a man to space." And I think that story for me captures so much of how much buy-in people had, which was important, right? They had this guiding light vision. But also importantly for me, he understood that we each play a role in that mission. And if somebody who was at Kennedy Space Center keeping the floors clean in the 60s could be part of that here in the, you know, in 2024, we have a role to play as well. When I was in college, there was a show on TV called The West Wing. And the second I saw it, I knew I wanted to be CJ Craig. I wanted to be press secretary to the president, but I had no idea how you could possibly get a job like that. I spent decades in campaigns and politics, mainly adjacent to, you know, knowing a space, watching launches and that kind of thing. And then I had the opportunity come up. They were hiring a press secretary at NASA, and I had the opportunity to apply for it. I don't even know if I knew that was a job. I'm not sure that I really understood that there was someone who would absolutely be doing this dream job that I would have. Once I learned about it, it was something I absolutely wanted to go for. Like I mentioned, I'm from Ohio, so I called anybody who was remotely connected to space and learned a lot. Before I started at NASA, and maybe I shouldn't say this now, I mean, I actually met President Obama once, and he asked me this question: how long have you been involved in space? And my answer was, oh, I've seen Star Wars like 1,000 times. I don't want to say that was my preparation for going to NASA, but I would say that that has absolutely sparked my imagination and my passion. Now that I've been to NASA, by the way, I now know that the right answer was Star Trek and not Star Wars. There's a definite, you know, divide between Star Wars and Star Trek fans. But the first day I got there, I was just full of, just overwhelmed with awe, overwhelmed with the generosity of every person I met sharing with me what they were learning and what they were working on. It really was kind of this, frankly, just unbelievable experience to be around people who are at the top of their game, whether they're a researcher or astrophysicist, doing the finances, HR, whatever they were doing there at NASA. And then to put that into the space lawyers, right? Space lawyers, you know, they're putting best of their craft and then putting it into creating this space industry that's evolving into a space economy. When my former boss, Charlie Bolden, was approached by Ron McNair about being an astronaut, Charlie tells this story where Ron asked him about applying for the astronaut corps. And Charlie said, I don't think they'll take me. And Ron McNair looked at him and said, that is the dumbest thing I have ever heard. I think about that all the time when I self-select out of an opportunity for myself, or think I can't do that because I'm a woman, or I can't do that because I'm in my mid-40s, or I can't do that because I live in Cincinnati, or I can't do that because I have this obligation. The best bit of advice I think is relevant to the business of space, but it goes beyond that, is to not opt yourself out before you know if it's a real opportunity or not. Now, I'll never go to space because I get motion sickness in the car, right? I have this fear of being in an EVA suit for 8 hours and needing to itch my nose, for example. But the best bit of advice that I've ever been given is don't opt yourself out. When it comes to the business of space, I think it's a big misconception that you somehow have to be part of a legacy to be part of the movement. And the truth is, the space industry is made up of people who grew up just staring at the moon and wondering, people who watched hundreds of episodes of Star Trek, people who won their science fair or just wondered, what if, what does that mean? And then they put themselves to work, study the things they need to start to. I've got a friend who's an astrophysicist who started out as a truck driver and then went to community college and now has a PhD in astrophysics, chases solar eclipses throughout the world. Don't determine what you are doing today is what you're going to be doing in the future. Space is for everyone. We're talking about building a space economy, and a space economy is going to demand not just astronauts, researchers, engineers, but accountants, lawyers, bankers, yoga instructors, whatever people do, right? It's a selling food, making materials, all of those things. And the future of that exists in every single classroom, every neighborhood conversation. So what I'm doing today is I speak to classes about space. I have answered a lot of questions about how I would go to the restroom in space and how yesterday's coffee is today's coffee. Goes over really well with fourth graders. I'm also on the board of trustees for the Cincinnati Observatory, which is the first public observatory in the United States. And I love that mission because it's all about space being accessible to everyone. John Quincy Adams dedicated this thing because it was so important at the time to expand knowledge. So anytime there's something I can give back, whether it's sharing with young people about space or opening up their imaginations to being a real career opportunity, I'm there to share it with them. I'm Lauren Worley, and you've been listening to Your Business in Space. All the ways to connect with me are in the links in the show notes. To discover more, head to innerastra.space.
Your Business in Space is brought to you by the InterAsher Institute. New episodes are available on Spotify, Apple Music, and most everywhere podcasts are found. To be the first to know when the next episode drops, head over to interastra.space.
This has been an InterAsher Institute and CXS Partners production.